Oh, good afternoon. I'm very happy this afternoon. It's the day and the company and the strange, who knows what possibilities are awaiting us. All the very big not knowing that we can either try to avoid at any cost or just wait with deep curiosity to see what's coming next. What is this? I received a new rock suit today on which I am supposed to write something. That makes me very, very happy, Sayo. Very beautiful job, too. So, somehow, as Coben told Blanche years ago, the Dharma takes care of itself. But somehow we have to find ourselves in the middle of it for that to happen. And then it's a happening. It's an action. It's not a thought thing. It's a kind of choiceless choice, you could say. I've been listening to Upaya's podcasts from this last week's meeting that they had with the great scientists, neurological scientists and sociological and behavioral, who have all been studying meditation and the mind. Not just the brain. In fact, they call it Zen practice and the environment. And the basis of it is the discovery that there is no body without another. That there is no such thing as one. And actually, there's no such thing as two either, which we discover in our practice, which is really weird. But experience tells us that that is the way of it. When I first started, even before practice, I used to go around asking myself, who are all these others? I had a sense of myself of who that is, I thought. I knew. it was my parents' child and my children's mother and etc. But who are you? With every you I met, I felt so mysterious. And as if there were a secret there somewhere. And it's so interesting that these people now are trying to unravel that secret. In real, using MRIs for one thing. The first talk was about the results of MRIs and how you could actually touch the neurons in the brain, and that there isn't any one place for anger or greed or ignorance or any of the other things that they used to think. There was a jealousy point and a anxiety point, and actually they exist everywhere. They're all totally connected, the neurons. So already there is an indication that there is no separation. But then the next scientist stood up and said, well, but MRI is a very clumsy thing. And you can get much closer in this other very fancy way. I'm not a scientist, so don't take my word for any of this. I'm just telling you what I took in, that there is another way of getting even closer that shows even more, especially about the reflection or the mirror neurons that actually record somebody else's movements in your own mind. That you're actually, as you encounter the world, you are being the world. And each one of us is a world. And so when we meet, although sometimes it feels like a collision, it never is a collision, because the meeting happens between. And then they try to describe the between, and that's the untalkaboutable, except that it's measurable. And now monkeys can think something happened, moving a hand on a computer screen. Picture of a hand, monkey thinks to move it and it moves the way it's taught to tell the computer to move. There actually is this connection that many of us have felt for our whole life, a very powerful force in between each of us that they're beginning to figure out how to measure and how to affect and how to they talked about the dangers of this and what it could do if it were in the wrong hands, of course, as every powerful idea happens. But at the same time, it's opening up a place where we have been parched for so long, so thirsty to know who are all these others. I belong to a little neighborhood listserv, which mostly tells when somebody has a bureau to sell or needs a babysitter or something like that. But this last week, there's been a big discussion about Ferguson. And somebody wrote and said that there is also reverse that although it looks like the blacks are attacking and being attacked, that it's working, that the whites are being attacked by the blacks at the same time, that there's reverse discrimination. And somebody took very great, was very offended by it, and said, "You shouldn't be talking about politics and religion in a situation like this." And he went on and on. And that elicited a beautiful essay about loving kindness from somebody else, some little householder in one of the little houses in Willow Glen. It was a most amazing encounter between what often happens on the internet, which is really, because it's the internet, I think, and people don't know each other, they say things they would never say face to face. And she was talking about face to face and how important that was, and how there was fear and there is love, and that we've got a choice, and why don't we just go for the love part? And he wrote back something nasty again. And I thought, this is our work. This is our work. This is self and other at work. And it's not very pleasant. It's kind of yucky sometimes. It feels bad. And yet, I think we have no choice. If we know what's true, then it's our it's our joy to express what we know and to deliver into our world what our world is about, so that every world is affected by whatever world we bring to it. Coben used to say, "Oh, I'm so happy to be in your world." And I love that. Oh, you're in my world and I'm in his world. And actually, I feel like I'm still in his world. After all these years and his being gone for so long, I'm still in Coben's world. I think in that way we don't die. Our worlds continue. The effect that this untalkable effect is what our meeting is about. And of course, in Zen we have this thing called menju, which means face-to-face encounter, which is why Coben always said all beings are members of our Sangha, because each one we meet is us. We become that world and they become our world. So in face-to-face, it doesn't necessarily mean our next-door neighbor or the grumpy guy. It could mean anything at all. It could mean sitting in the grass and encountering all the grass blades, or opening a door, or standing in the rain. Being open to the experience of what we call other, as being that. Not encountering it as something, but being as it is, and allowing it, and therefore knowing what to do. Often we say, "What shall I do? The world's a mess. How can I take care of everything?" Of course, the answer is can't. But moment by moment, sitting in the grass or standing in the rain, driving a car, soothing a child, of course we know. So cultivating what I'm starting to think of as the in-between, I think, is extremely important part of our practice. And of course we do that. We do that in Dokusan. And it's different with each person. Is so different. Each one has her own way, his own way. And so we adjust so that we are in line. That's always such a very wonderful thing to be able to do, to line up with someone, whether it's a baby or an old person. It's always possible. And it doesn't necessarily take words. Sometimes words are cheap. And silence gives us a deeper connection than we would have otherwise. Very important to know when to talk and when not to. It's a very noisy world we're in. I think our first hour was a perfect example of what a noisy world we have, and how lucky we are in some ways that those leaves got taken care of in a very quick way. How we adjust to the things that hurt, like noise. It's like Jack adjusting to the Boy Scout troop that was playing loud music from 5 o'clock in the morning till 9 o'clock at night during his so-called silent retreat in the mountains. He said it took him a long time to get used to it. And finally, it was okay. So I think we have a job in that way of accepting what feels unacceptable in a lot of ways and just let it in. Thank you very much. Hope you go away soon. But just let it be. I've been talking a lot about the self. We've been talking about the Heart Sutra on Tuesday nights and the self concept, the 5 skandhas, the bits and pieces that make up a human life, a human body, mind. And it's also about the undoing of the self. Seeing so clearly how utterly changeable, how utterly ephemeral it is to be this. And so again, we are enlivened by meeting, enlivened by being a world in worlds. Sometimes people try to retreat. And there was a question about that in the Upaya thing to Joan Halifax. And she said, oh, she didn't think people should do self-retreats unless they had a teacher. They shouldn't ever go out all by themselves. And Coben said that too. He said, always make sure that someone knows where you are and always make sure you get checked and every now and then if you have to do that. But in reality, Coben always said, and Roshi Jones said so too, you're never alone. You're always a world in a world. Whether it's a forest world or an ocean world, you're always a world in a world that includes all the others. So I think our work as human beings and as students of this mysterious practice that the more we remember how big we are, how much it is, how altogether very particular to the moment it is at the same time, that the things that hurt us and excite and frighten or make us want to turn away become small. The bigger we understand our world is, the smaller our own little reactions, our own little animal jumps and starts and tears and all the things that we respond to without actually being present for. Much easier to handle if the mind is wide enough. So that's been my... I had x-rays a couple of weeks ago of my back because my back has been bothering me. And since I went through the drama of the drug withdrawal, which not you don't need to know, it's over. But they took a look at the back and they said, maybe you should do a little bit more physical therapy. So I lie on my back and lift my legs and do various things and listen to the podcasts. And I just have been loving doing that. I just think it's the coolest thing to get a stronger core and take care of things in a better way and be informed in this way that is so interesting and so revealing to me of our practice, of how it really is with us, or how it is that they're looking deeply into what it is that we know instinctively almost we know the truth, but to find a way of speaking about it and enacting it in the world is what's most important. So I recommend it. It's free. They ask for a donation, of course, but and they have a ton of other, I mean, Stephen Batchelor talks there, and Alan Watts, and not Alan Watts, the other Alan.
Wallace.
Alan Wallace and Beata's there. There are a lot of wonderful teachers that she have gone through, Upaya. So, and then the scientists come once a year, or every other year maybe. So they're all on there too. So that's what I brought this afternoon. Should probably have some questions or comments.
Between?
Well, they couldn't talk about it very well. They're trying to measure it, because that's the between, is where the monkey is able to do things, make things happen. And from what they were saying, it seemed like they were doing a lot with R2-D2s, you know, these little guys who are not real people at all, but can be affected by people's minds. And paraplegics are benefiting from this tremendously. They can move their arms even though they can't move their arms. And they can walk even though they can't walk. There are a lot of TED Talks about this from some of those scientists that don't really explain it, because I don't think they can explain it exactly. And they keep saying, this isn't psychic. This isn't psychic, but it sure sounds like psychic, like we used to think of psychic. So, Alice, I don't know. I feel it. You feel it. We all feel it. It's us. And then this little thing that runs around like a mouse or a pipsqueak or something is just a tiny part of it. A big little breathing, swallowing, sniffing, sneezing, walking, lying down, dreaming. Part of it. Bits and pieces. We don't really know. The MRI guy, he was really contradicted, though he stood up for it. He said, and he's trying to fit his MRI into the tinier thing and make it all cohere. And so they're not nearly done. They're just working really, really hard. Yeah. So, anybody who knows about this, please, let's develop it and see where we can go with it.
I don't know about it, but I'm going to make a comment anyway. In just starting to dip into the Kaz Ta-Nehisi book with the translation that he did with Joan Halifax of the Heart Sutra, mm-hmm. that, as you know, they are using boundlessness instead of emptiness.
Yes.
And I'm sort of understanding this when you're talking about this kind of world that exists between us and other. Mm-hmm. It is, in a way, it's a sort of boundless world.
Exactly. Yes. And of course, within that world, we can put on blinders.
Right.
And the narrower that world is, the more intense it is, and the more mistakes we make because we're just not clear enough. We can't see.
And that, and is that, that's actually ignorance, then, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Yeah.
Mm. Well, it's, I don't understand it either, but I find it very helpful to think the way you've been talking and mm-hmm. of someone being, you being in someone's world and you being in my world.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite interesting what happens.
It is. Yeah. And it's what we call love. Not the singing violins and roses kind of love, but the kind of love that is accepting and allowing. Yeah. Huh?
Since science is jumping into the mind and the brain so much, is that making like the old traditions irrelevant? Because it's not tradition, but it's kind of scientific stuff.
Oh, I don't think they think so. These guys all practice Zen, so they're committed to practice already and have had a lot of experience already. So it's not like they're coming out from a place of not knowing, of not having experienced what it is that we experience. And so it's not the same. They're very humble and know how little they know and are willing to admit it and to use the Dharma, their understanding of Dharma, and try to illuminate the Dharma with their work. So it kind of works both ways, and they're very suspicious of themselves and always talking about, you know, what they don't know, and maybe they're making a mistake, and they're very scientific. They're not science like with the capital S, but the kinds who doubt. The only good scientist is a doubting one. Isn't that right, Jerry? No.
Well, I don't know how to comment.
In my book, a doubting science is the best kind, but who knows? Who knows? It's interesting to hear them talking together like that. Anything else? Well, that was a short talk, but that just gives us a little bit longer to walk and to sit. So let's do it. Thank you. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.